Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. November is National Novel Writing Month, or NaNoWriMo, in which participants try to bang out an entire first draft of a novel, at least 50,000 words or 200 pages, in just 30 days. It started in 1999 with just 21 participants. By 2005, there were more than 59,000, and the event's founder decided to file NaNoWriMo as a nonprofit, which is now called the Office of Letters and Light. In 2020, NaNoWriMo boasted 383,064 writers, and we suspect that you, dear listener, might be among this year's participants. So as we come to the end of the month, we wanted to have a conversation about the writing process, particularly how to bring a novel to a satisfying resolution and what revisions look like. Joining me now to join us is Matt Bell, writing professor at Arizona State University and author of many books, including his latest novel, Appleseed, and a book on this subject. It is called Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in Three Drafts. Matt, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you.
Listeners, are you participating in National Novel Writing Month? Give us a call. Tell us how it's going. Maybe you have a question about how to end your novel or about the revision process. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, calling all novel writers. Okay, so there's only a couple days left in November, in this month, which means a lot of people are probably coming to the end or thinking about the end of their novel. What does an author need to give readers after the big climatic action? Really, before the book ends, what do writers need to keep in mind?
I love that question. You know, I think one of the things I'm always thinking about in my own books is, you know, you have all these mysteries that you've launched the book with, and you're answering those questions as you get into that third act. And there's always a place where I get worried that I'm going to like too cleanly wrap it up, that I'm going to answer too much. I'm looking for like the mystery beyond the mystery. Like, how does the book open back up and like leave the reader with something that lingers? And I think the other part of it is I have this sort of theory that the ending is where the worldview of the readers or the writer is most apparent. You can really see the way someone thinks about how life turns out or how life should turn out or how people should be rewarded or punished for their actions. And I think as writers are working through that last sort of denouement material, they inevitably are sort of engaging how they feel about sort of life in general, which feels like an exciting thing to think about what you're leaving the reader with.
It's such an accomplishment to even finish a first draft, and then you have to start about thinking about revising. What are some of the obstacles to revising?
Yeah, that's I think one of the scariest part of revising maybe is that you have to face what you've made, and you know it'll be imperfect. It's okay that it's imperfect, and so I think some of it is being willing to do the work of revision, being willing to probably make it worse temporarily while you're fixing it.
Oh,
like kind of like fixing a car or something, like you break it and then you put it back together. So I think that's often part of it. And I think there's sometimes, I think about revision and rewriting as two really different things, like to tinker with something or to minorly adjust the revision, and then rewriting being a bigger sort of reconceiving of it. And I think rewriting does more work. But if you've written a whole novel this month, your willingness to retype another novel in December might be low.
How are you feeling about this idea of this condensed writing schedule? Because you've talked about in the three-draft process being patient, taking breaks. This exercise does not really allow that to happen. So what do you think are the benefits of getting this first draft, banging it out in 30 days?
Yeah, I did NaNoWriMo in 2005, so the first novel-length thing I ever wrote was one. And I think the best thing it does is, in some ways, just tell you that you can write something that long. You can write something that long that has a beginning, middle, and end, even if it's imperfect. When I teach novel writing, I'm always sort of emphasizing like finishing that first draft, no matter what the quality of it is maybe the most important thing you can do for yourself, because it gives you that confidence that you can write something that big. And NaNoWriMo would do that for everyone who does it, if you reach the end of your novel. I think it's also like a lot of fun to write that fast. It's sort of like a challenging thing. It's exciting. there's a word that I'm not gonna be able to come up with, a medical word for when you are like out of oxygen, the easily accessible oxygen, and then your body goes into like the next thing, like maybe it's anaerobic.
Anaerobic,
or something, but
yeah.
You get into that next energy burst. And I think when you write 1,667 words a day for 30 days, you do that with your imagination. You get past the easily accessible stuff into something else, something deeper. I think that can be really fun.
What advice would you give to someone who reads back what they've written in 30 days and realizes, ooh.
Yeah.
I may have done this, but it's not very good.
Yeah. I think that's part of the process too. That's mm-hmm. always part of the process. That doesn't go away no matter how many books you write. You know, one of the things that's hardest about writing, maybe the speed of NaNoWriMo gets you past this too, is to suspend judgment about what you've made for sort of as long as possible. And it's hard to even write a book if you're judging as you go, because your first draft will not look like a published novel. There's really, for most people anyway, I think if you can, great. But for most of us, they look pretty bad. But no one judges you on anything you don't show them. So you have the chance through revision and rewriting to make it into what you want it to be. But I think understanding that difference between the books on the shelf and the book that's in your first draft folder is good to know.
What about the other end of the spectrum? People who are deeply infatuated with their own writing. Do you believe in the, some people call it the kill all your darlings, kill the bunnies, that you
sure.
have to go back in and just and rip apart something you love?
There's always some of that, right? But I mean, ideally, the book would be nothing but darlings. You should love your book, you know? You know, you're just asking about analyzing it. Most of us give it to someone else to read, right? That's part of our process. And one of the things I always find daunting is after you get feedback at whatever level, you have to kind of fall in love with your book again. I have to like get back to it because the feedback can disrupt that. And so can analyzing it. But I think as you go through revision and rewriting, you still want to stay in contact with like that energy of the first draft or that thing that you loved that made you want to write the book. And really the reason for revision and rewriting is so that the reader can have as powerful as an experience with that material as you had in your imagination. So hopefully it's less daunting and more that you're moving the book to where someone else or maybe many someone else can enjoy it in the same way that you hopefully did while you were writing.
My guest is author and writing professor Matt Bell. The name of the book is Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in Three Drafts, now that some of you out there have written a novel in one month. So first draft, getting it down. Second draft, it's about revisions. What is the purpose of draft number three?
I think for me, my second draft is really getting like the plot and the structure of the book, like the best it can be, right? Sort of moving from this first conception to the best possible way of telling the story. And then a third draft for me is polishing revision. And I really think of that as making the turn from the writer-based version of the book, the version that was for me, to like the best possible version I can give readers. And it includes people like editors and agents and whoever else you might show it to, that those it really has to reach them at a really high level. So it's just about making that the tightest it can be. I really think in that polishing place, which can be very mechanical in ways that is not as imaginative as the first two drafts, is also the place where the book starts to feel like something that you could pick up off a shelf. The prose gets as good, the structure gets as tight. And there's a real pleasure in feeling that gap between like your book, your, you know, that you wrote in a month and this like the kind of thing that you've been reading your whole life. You feel that gap close over that third draft. I think that's deeply pleasurable.
As you're trying to make scenes really tight, it's one of the things you talk about. What is a guiding question? Are some guiding questions writers should ask themselves to determine whether a scene is done, whether it's tight enough or needs more tightening?
Yeah, I think the big question I'm asking sort of every scene is what changed? Like what change has happened during the scene? And change could be something like discovery or a complication or reversal or resolution, but something is different than it was before. And I'm also looking like for whose action caused that change. Because often it's possible if the protagonist or the main character can cause the change in the scene, then they're the one driving their story. And so I think I'm often adjusting that. In my first draft, there's often scenes where nothing changes or a secondary character is making all the big decisions. And so it's trying to move the sort of hero of your story into that position where they're the one driving the action. And I think when that's happening in most of the scenes, the book feels very active.
So let's talk about publication. How should a new writer decide whether to self-publish or brave the publishing industry?
Yeah, I think braving the publishing industry is daunting. But I think if, you know, for most people, if you want there to be lots of readers, that's often the path. There's nothing wrong with self-publishing. I think self-publishing can be great. You just have to know why you're doing it. I think the question I always ask people is like, what will feel like success for you or for this project? You know, if you want your NaNoWriMo novel to be like reviewed in the New York Times, that's a certain publishing path, right? That you sort of have to go through. If you want it to exist as a physical object, that may be a great reason to self-publish. My NaNoWriMo novel I wrote in 2005, I printed one copy of, right? I have a copy of it on my shelf. No one else has even read it, but there's like one copy of it like over here somewhere. And I'm really glad to like have it. It was cool to see it as like a book. I think that mattered a lot to me. But that was the right thing for that project. So a lot of it is really knowing what will make you happy in your sort of heart of hearts for the book you've written.
If you want to go the traditional publishing route, where does a new writer start?
I think for a lot of people, it's sort of figuring out, I mean, for the traditional publishing, you'd want to have an agent who would then pitch it to editors at publishing houses. So part of what you're doing is researching agents that might be a good fit for you. One of the ways I always suggest people start with that is look at recently published books and see in the acknowledgments in the back, like who the agent is. They're often thanked, right? And newer agents are more likely to take on new writers. So it's looking at people who are debut authors and seeing who their agents are in your genre of choice will sometimes lead you to like the first people who might be right for you, assuming that the agent's taste is represented in the books they published, right? So sort of looking in that way is probably the first place to start getting the lay of the land in that way.
And also, I think don't get discouraged if an agent doesn't want to work with you. It only takes one good one. Say that, but like a house, a partner in life, and a book agent. You just need one good one.
And that was my experience, right? I mean, most of the agents I sent my books to did not want to work on them. And the one who does is great. There's always those stories about this book got rejected by 100 times, but like all books kind of get rejected 100 times. They send it out to a bunch of editors or a bunch of agents, and mostly people say no, even to really good books. But you find your right person, as you said, and it's very exciting to find that when it happens.
Parting words of advice or encouragement for those who are near the finish line of their novel? They have a day or so to go?
Yeah, I think, at this point, you know, you just want to see it through. You're so close. I think the end of a novel draft for me has often felt like a gift. You know, you do all this work and you often don't know what you're doing and you're sort of, you know, is this all working? And then at the end, sometimes like a real moment of clarity where it comes really easily. And I hope that happens for everybody else. It feels like all the hard work gets you that like good last day or two where the end just like appears. And I hope that's happening for 380,000 people across the country right now.
The book is called Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts. I've been speaking with writing professor and author Matt Bell. Matt, thank you for all the encouragement for our listeners and writers.
Thanks so much for having me.